The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 18 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sant, the host of Catholics of Oz. Welcome to episode 18. It's good to be back behind the mics and talking again for this episode. Caroline is joining me today. And Caroline, how are you going?
I am well, thank you. I'm especially happy because the warm weather is here this week. It's a mild 24 degrees Celsius or so here and the sun is out and I'm loving it.
I'm looking out my window and I can see blue skies, sunshine, green grass, trees. Yeah, just it is actually quite nice and refreshing,
just
isn't it?
Happiness finally. All around. Yes, totally. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. So, before we continue then, just to remind everyone to like the Catholics of Oz on the SQPN Facebook page when our episodes come out. Don't forget to retweet our episodes on Twitter and leave us comments as well so that we can see what it is that you like about the show. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast apps. And also we're on YouTube. So if you search for SQPN on YouTube, you'll find all of SQPN's shows there, including The Catholics of Oz. All you need to do is hit the bell to get notifications when new episodes come out. You can also leave feedback on podcast directories and podcast players such as iTunes, and these help to share the show with others and get more attention and get more listeners on board. So, Caroline, why don't we start with Faith Beyond Borders?
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So, Caroline, this is an interesting topic because normally when we talk about Faith Beyond Borders, we'll talk about, you know, notable people who have gone out and done something pretty amazing in terms of the faith, you know, some bold evangelizing practices. In the past, we've also talked about maybe not so helpful evangelizing practices. And I'm actually a little bit unsure where this one sits. I've, you know, read a couple of different opinions about it. But let's have a look at this. One of the headlines I saw was cheekily called "In Robata Christi," which is a cheeky rewording of what we say "In Persona Christi," which is what we say is the role of the priest when they've been ordained into the priesthood. So basically, this story is about the idea of robot religious clergy. So it all started because they were looking at a priest whose name is Mindar and has been installed in a 400-year-old Buddhist temple in Kyoto, Japan. But this priest, as I said, has been installed because this priest is a robot made of aluminium and silicon for starters and is a $1 million machine who can, I think, give blessings and has one specific sermon that it gives over and over again at the moment. And what the programmers are hoping to do is to be able to put more AI into this robot so that it can do more things as well, so it could be more spontaneous. So, now why this affects us is because in the original article on Vox, which was looking at the ethics of AI, robots, and theology, and they were trying to say, will AI change theology? Will it change the way that we look at God? So they interviewed a Franciscan sister, and I'm just trying to find my little spot where it talks about her. And her name is Isla Delio, and she holds two PhDs and chairs theology at Villanova University. And she said basically that maybe traditional Catholicism needs to reimagine itself and its understanding of human priests as being divinely consecrated, which is basically the sacrament they receive when they become priests and fulfill their priestly function. Now, we know, Caroline, as lay people, that to be a priest, you need to be ordained. You need to be male. You know, these are mm-hmm. this is the way the church does this. And so not anyone can just receive holy orders. Can a robot receive holy orders is the, you know, or be, you know, a clergy member is what the question is here. So I'll just talk about what she has said, and maybe we'll just talk about this because there are, you know, this is it's a little bit controversial, you know what I mean? But
just a little.
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah. But she said that the Catholic notion would say the priest is ontologically changed upon ordination. Is that really true? She asked. Maybe priestliness is not an esoteric essence, but a programmable trait that even fallen creation like a robot can embody. We have these fixed philosophical ideas that AI challenges those, and AI challenges those ideas. It challenges Catholicism to move towards a post-human priesthood. So, Caroline, should we be moving towards a post-human, gender-neutral priesthood?
Oh my goodness! Okay.
And I say that because later on it talks about the idea that a priest, a robot priest, would be gender-neutral. And that might be a better thing. And actually, one part that weirded me out was it said it would reduce the problem of clergy sex abuse. But I have opinions on that, and we'll get to that later on. But yeah, robot priest Caroline, what do you think?
Oh my goodness, I don't even know where to start with this one. first of all, I don't know if I want to talk to a robot. I think I feel like a bit stupid talking to a robot because. He's just a robot. The other thing is, I guess, how much real value am I going to get by having an interaction with a robot? I mean, artificial intelligence kind of learns from what is input into it and maybe what it kind of, you know, puts together from past experiences, and you know, it's like a program that kind of develops, you know, as it has more and more interactions with people. But how do we know it's going to come to the right conclusions if I ask it a question, you know, a theological question, a moral question? It doesn't have the human experience, you know, it just has a program inside it, or you know, it's kind of an artificial development. I mean, I guess we can continue to input things into the robot so it learns more and more. But I don't know if I'm going to get the right kind of pastoral care that I would seek from a human priest. I mean, I know that, you know, a priest has studied for many years and kind of really made the discernment and decided to choose to become a priest and, you know, follow that vocation and really dedicate themselves to it and to the people. But a robot is kind of created by a person and, you know, it hasn't, not that it would have a choice anyway, whatever we create doesn't have a choice to be what it is, but I don't know if we're going to get the depth of care that we really need. You know, it's like I have, say, for example, apps on my phone that like I can pray along with the rosary, I can pray along with the Chaplet of Divine Mercy and that kind of thing, but my phone's not going to give me advice and that kind of thing. Like I just use it as a tool. Perhaps I could use the robot, you know, a robot priest to kind of maybe help me look up this chapter or what is, you know, where can I find this? But maybe I can do that on my phone already. I can Google that kind of thing. So I don't know if we need $1 million AI robot priests running around. I mean, there you go. $1 million is quite a lot of money anyway. So, I mean, you know, a human priest, you don't have to pay $1 million. I mean, okay, it costs money to get them to where they are, but I mean, it's a gradual thing, and they dedicate themselves and give themselves back. So you know, there's so many. Oh, I don't even know. I mean, even the gender thing. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm okay with priests being males. No problem with that. I'm quite traditional in that way. you know, I'm used to nuns being female. It's just how it's been traditionally and how, you know, things have been structured. I think the gender thing is quite just a modern issue that has kind of come up. I don't know what else to say about this one, Lindsay.
it does boggle the mind a little bit.
It does.
Going on one of your points, so one thing that it was a concern that I had, and you've kind of hinted at as well, is that you're right. I mean, whose life experience is the robot priest's based on? It's based on the person that programs it. And in fact, in some of the technology podcasts I listen to on the Twit network, they've talked before about how, for example, our Amazon Echoes and our, and other devices might be biased towards preferences that the programmers have put into it through its machine code as well. So it might, when it's, answering a question for you, the answer might be biased towards a particular viewpoint, just because not out of any kind of devious kind of conspiracy theory or anything, but just because the person who's programming it has their own point of view as well. They're not, they are going to have a bias. We all have bias towards something. So how do we know that a robot priest, that it can have the that complete lack of bias, I guess.
That's true. And I'll just quickly say too that priests, I mean, especially missionary priests who go around different communities and have that experience, they have experience with different cultures and a lot of different types of human interaction. So anything that, any advice or, care that they can give is also formed by all of those human interactions, so it's a natural learning for them, and all of their experiences helps them to do their job as well. But a robot will have limited kind of experience, not able to go around into different communities, so I think that's something valuable that a human can contribute and probably a robot can't,
Yeah, and in fact, I want to backtrack something that that Sister Leah said as well in this. She said, the Catholic notion would say the priest is ontologically changed upon ordination. Is that really true? She asked. And my answer would be, yeah, of course it is.
Totally.
That's the idea.
They do all that theology study 101. And whatever for nothing,
yeah.
Do they?
It's like, all right, let's just throw all of our theology degrees out. She seems to be saying that theology and some of the philosophy that it's linked to is rigid, I think. But I don't know if I agree with that. I actually feel a bit uncomfortable with it because the idea of the sacraments is ontology is basically the person, right? The interior of the person and who the person is and whatever else. But basically, the idea that that we're not ontologically changed by the sacraments disturbs me, that she would kind of propose that idea. And I don't want to criticize her, you know what I mean? Like she's making a contribution, whatever, but I am disturbed by the idea because for me, the sacraments are also linked to grace. And suddenly the role of grace takes a backseat if we're saying that the sacraments don't ontologically change someone. Because what we say is with a priest, and we talked before about in persona Christi, like when the priest is performing his priestly functions, he's performing them as Christ. He is the representative of Christ sacramentally there for us. So, for example, at the consecration, it's Christ who's doing the work through the priest. The priest is there to be a representation of Christ. Or think about Catholic weddings. I'm just thinking about this now. At a wedding. Seriously though, the husband and wife are the ones who actually carry out the sacrament, through the vows. And the priest is God's witness for that. The priest is Christ, the witness of Christ. They're present. The third person who's part of our marriages, is Christ. So, I wouldn't want a robot, representing, I'm just imagining like C-3PO or someone,
I mean? If it was C-3PO,
with a collar.
I'd be fine with it.
Okay, maybe I'd be more inclined if it was C-3PO, all right, but you know what I mean? But like just imagining something along those lines. It introduces for me some kind of artificiality, I guess. And also I think it's a bit strange, like later on in the article it's saying, could Could having robot priests reduce the amount of sexual abuse of children is a bizarre statement to make, I thought, because well, a couple of reasons. First of all, the rates of child sexual abuse have gone down and decades ago, not recently, not suddenly, you know, a year ago and they've done something about it. Things have been done about it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In seminaries, for example, training has changed a lot, you know, especially in this. The psychological testing of potential priests and deacons has really been ramped up to ensure that people like this don't, you know, don't actually end up in seminary, which may not mm-hmm. have been the case, you know, decades ago where just about anyone could walk in and get ordained. And maybe I'm being a bit freewheeling with that, but that's kind of, you know, how it kind of sounded. But then the other thing is, all right, let's just say hypothetically that a robot priest could, you know, would reduce the amount of abuse or whatever other kinds of behaviors. That would be the same for anything. That would be like saying, give a child robot parents because the robot parents aren't going to, you know, shout at the child or, you know, or hit the child or, you know, or whatever else. You know, so, you know, or give wives robot husbands because that will reduce domestic violence. You know, it doesn't, it's not a solution to a problem, if you know what I mean, that solution to a problem is like those. Yeah, well, yeah. Okay, so there's an advantage there. All right. Okay, I stand corrected. All right. You've just pulled the rug right out from all of my arguments. Now, look, now the thing is, right, so, we don't want to appear closed-minded, but, you know, in terms of what a robot could do, the priesthood is probably not the best place to put it. There would be uses for robots in Catholicism in the future if robots became as advanced as they may do, or until they Skynet us all. But between now and then, you know, there probably would be uses for robots. I'm sure we could think of things like that, you know, functions they could provide and whatever. But at the same time, I think of this. When I use Siri or when I use my Amazon Echo or any other voice assistant, as smart as they might be, you're always aware of the limitations that they have. And you know that you can only relate to it so far. There's only so much that you can put into your relationship with a device.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not always going to get anything meaningful out of it except for information. Whereas with a human being, your relationship can go as far as you and that other human are willing to put that. It can go as far as marriage, or it can go as far as a deep and trusting lifelong friendship. It can be an acquaintance, but at least you have a choice to decide that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's probably important for a priest to be a person that you can relate to. You know, some priests you'll know as father, at least. Say a Catholic priest that you might see that you've never met before, at least you know as a Catholic, you can walk up to this priest and say, hello, hey, I'm a Catholic too, and have a nice discussion, and that you'll probably get a good reception from that priest. Or the priest might be your parish priest and you might be deep friends, you know, like the two Father Michaels that we've experienced recently. You know, they're people we know and that we can trust and that we can talk to on a very personal level, a very deeply personal level, and get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see a robot, even with machine learning, being able to develop the same kind of experiences and pastoral care that a human priest could. And in fact, it's kind of liberating to know your own parish priests or limitations as well, because you can work with those. I could talk about our priest and, you know, for example, our current parish priest on Facebook, every week he puts a post. And it's he calls it the post of a flawed parish priest, and he humbly talks about things that he learns. You know, like he learned something from a child recently while giving communion. You know, an experience that knocked him sideways and made him think differently as well. So I think knowing the flaws of our and the limits of our priests in a human sense helps us a lot more. And I'm just thinking of all these different human relationship things that a robot can't do and most likely will never be able to do.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think robots are missing some of that human interaction, the human touch that we really need from a priest.
So we've got a couple of articles that we'll share. We'll share the original article from Vox, which was talking about theology and AI and the possible merging of the two. I think there was even a mention about a guy in Silicon Valley who started a robotic church of some kind. and this is the other thing as well. So basically, he's invented a god for robots to worship. And so even that is kind of a bit strange, because we didn't invent a god to worship. We worship a god who exists and who came to Earth and who wants a relationship with us. Mm. So it's even there, like, they're talking about the idea of inventing religion, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, while religion does have invention in the sense that things are added to it and, you know, things are changed over time, the core of it is the belief. The core of it is the idea that there is a God who's behind this. And the, I'm doing air quotes here, the invention of religion is facilitating things that will help us to have a relationship with that God, not to worship an invented idea, which is what even what this guy seems to be hinting at as well. All right, that's right. We've got another article from the Catholic Herald as well.
Yeah.
And that it kind of goes into a bit more discussion. It's basically, the headline is, "In Robota Christi? Why Robots Can Never Be Catholic Priests." And it's actually quite thoughtful as well. It's not a critical article. They talk to other theologians and religious sisters as well, who have different opinions. So, for example, one thing I'll just throw in is that Sister Mary Krista Nutt, she says that Catholics are not dualists. So the idea is, like, a robot, you know, our flesh and our interior life are one. They're not separate, if that makes sense. So,
yeah,
you know, we are, you know, we are bodies and we are, you know, spirits, souls. Though, but they're not two separate realities. They're one reality. Whereas the focus of making a robot is that it's just the, well, flesh or the metal, you know what I mean? The silicon. There is no interior life for a robot. There's just programming. So even in that sense, she says that, you know, if robots are incapable of having an interior life or a human soul, they can't be conformed to Christ like you would in the sacrament of holy orders. Yeah. So anyway, I think we've we've exhausted that topic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Father Android's a bad idea, I guess, for now, at least.
Father Android. Yeah. No, not for now. Not for me. It's not my thing. No.
Yeah. All right. Let's I just want to finish Faith Beyond Borders, Caroline. I saw this story this morning. It's a late edition. And this is a very quick one, because not much has happened. Are you excited about Channel 10's recreation of The Amazing Race? It's been 5 years since The Amazing Race has aired on television in Australia. I don't know if it's airing in the United States or anywhere else in the world, but certainly in Australia, it's been 5 years. And so they've brought it back. They've rebadged it on Channel 10. Mm-hmm. Are you excited at all that The Amazing Race is coming back?
I cannot contain myself. That is how excited I am.
Yeah. Well, you might, I normally wouldn't watch The Amazing Race. You know, you watch the same thing over and over for 20 seasons. There's not much more to catch your attention. However, this one might pique my interest, because two religious sisters from the Missionaries of God's Love have entered, and they were in the trailer, which may, you know, the Catholic Leader, which I think is a Brisbane-based Catholic magazine online, they had an article saying, yes, you did see two nuns in the Amazing Race Australia trailer. So we'll put a link to that in our show notes, and we'll follow up that story if there's anything of merit. But what I can say is that one of the sisters ran a half marathon in 2015, and throughout that marathon, she was using it as prayer for young people. So I'm guessing they'll be using this Amazing Race for some kind of religious purpose as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to see them getting out there. And I mean, there's many ways to evangelize and show that, you know, just because you believe in God, or, you know, you're a sister or a priest, it doesn't mean you have to just stay in church all day. You can get out there and do things and be part of the community, which is really, that's really refreshing to see. I think it's great.
Yeah, and we've seen religious people on, you know, going as far back as Australian Idol. We had Father Rob, that we like to talk about a lot, on X Factor. Do you remember Sister Christina Scuccia in Italy? She actually won that one. It was it X Factor as well? Or anyway, one of the, there's so many singing competitions. Yeah, so there's a whole lot of different ways that people go out beyond the borders, which is good to see.
Yeah, so good to let them, you know, also be themselves. I mean, they are religious, you know, they are religious, you know, priests or nuns, but, you know, they can also express themselves in their way as well while they are, you know, performing their roles, which is, you know, I think that's great for them as well. Great for us, great for them.
Yeah, yeah, it's inspiring to see religious. I'm not saying every religious should do this. I'm not saying religious who don't do this are not inspiring. Of course,
no,
they
it's
are.
Whatever they're called to do, you know. But if yeah, they're called in this yeah, way, yeah. why not? You know, go yeah. for it.
That's a good way to put it. Seeing, yeah, it's inspiring to see religious live out their vocation to the best of its possibilities. And if yeah. some of them see that as going beyond their everyday lives to be in talent shows and to do things that get Christ on the map in some kind of way in the secular world, I think that's a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah.
All right. Agreed. So let's move on, Caroline. I'm going to throw it over to you because now we're going to talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
So, Caroline, science. So, there's a bit of background to this. You had to watch half of this at one point and half at another point. So, yes. I'll do a bit of background and let you take over.
Okay.
But basically, on what was it last Sunday,
Sunday
our time?
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Elon Musk was doing a live presentation for SpaceX about their new Starship rocket. And you only got to watch half of it because we were actually on Let's Talk with Father Corey, which we'll say more about a little bit later on. So you watched half of it and then had to watch the rest of it a little bit later on. And I know you're very excited about this and I'm interested to hear more. So tell us about SpaceX and their new Starship rocket.
So Elon Musk has this way of getting people excited about what he's doing, right? Watching this presentation, I got really excited about it as well. I think SpaceX is a fantastic organization. You know, I've really been enjoying watching their, you know, reusable boosters, you know, the rocket launches up and the booster comes back down and lands again, which, you know, still boggles my mind. But it's, yeah, I just love watching that. So Elon Musk has these grand plans for humans to expand beyond the borders of Earth and to live and work on Moon and Mars. So he's really pushing forward, you know, pushing to get this happening. His mentality is that, you know, the humans should become an interplanetary race. So not just living on Earth, but getting ourselves out there into the wider solar system as far as possible. The idea of this is to get humans into space, but using his latest rocket incarnation called the Starship. And so what he wants to do with this is, as he's doing with his reusable boosters, is to make space travel affordable and very realistic, because at the moment it's quite expensive. But he's really aiming to get it down to the level where, you know, you buy a car and once you've used your car, you don't throw it away, you use your car again. Same with the airplane. Mm-hmm. We don't use an airplane once and then throw it out. We use, you know, we reuse it. So he wants to do this with spacecraft. So the latest incarnation is the Starship, and he launched this prototype, or he released it, you know, showed it to everybody with this live presentation on. It's actually the 11th anniversary of SpaceX getting one of their craft, the Falcon, into orbit for the first time. So it was very exciting for him as well. So currently SpaceX have the Falcon 9, which already delivers supplies and experiments to the International Space Station. And it's got the Dragon module that docks with the space station itself. And that's always exciting to watch. Then earlier this year, they had the Falcon Heavy launch. You probably remember when he launched that and also launched his Tesla into space with Starman there. And that was the boosters on that. There were two of them and they actually landed back to space. To Earth. Seeing two of those land together. Wow.
It was amazing, wasn't it?
That was amazing. Yeah. Now this endeavor is much more amazing. I'll try not to take over the whole episode talking about this because there's so much to talk about. I watched the whole hour and 25, you know, minutes of or 45 minutes of this presentation. It was just so inspiring. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't stop watching. So, okay, so the Starship is in two stages. So, you know, with the current rockets, you know, you have a couple of stages that go up and then you have the ship that actually is in orbit and, you know, does what it has to do, docks with the space station. This one will be two stages, the Starship stage and then they will have a booster stage. So this Starship is massive, I have to say. It is 50 meters tall and it's going to be designed, it's actually bigger than Millennium Falcon, just to, you know, just to give you some kind of idea of how big it
that,
is.
That makes it easier to understand now. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there you go.
Now I can visualize it. Yep.
Yes, there you go. It's designed to carry a payload of about 150 tons. And its mass itself, there's a lot of numbers going around, but it's 120 tons and he's trying to make it even lighter. It's pretty fuel efficient. Most of it is carrying liquid oxygen. So they plan to burn 3.5 tons of liquid oxygen for 1 ton of fuel, and which is quite good. I think the Falcon now, he said it's about 2 tons of oxygen to 1 ton of fuel. So this one will be even more efficient. And so it will have 3 Raptor engines on it and they gimbal, which means they can move slightly and that controls the direction of the spacecraft.
Yep.
And then it will have 3 vacuum engines. Now, look, there was a lot of technical stuff going on, which
yes.
I did understand. I mean, his brain goes a mile an hour, you know, a million miles an hour, and he's such a genius, you know, that he couldn't get his words out fast enough. So, you know, that in itself was pretty cool to see. So the Starship itself will have it's made out of, you know, one thing he was very excited about is that he changed the design from being made from carbon fiber to stainless steel. Now,
yes, I heard about this. So yes. How does that help?
So apart from making it really pretty and shiny, apparently stainless steel in very cold temperatures, so in space, it doesn't get brittle. It actually gets stronger, which is great for the integrity of the ship. And in very hot temperatures, so for example, when they are coming back down to Earth, so when the ships land back down to Earth and, you know, have to go through, you know, the atmosphere there, it has a very high melting temperature, about 1500 degrees Celsius. So what that means is that they will have some ceramic tiles for the parts that get extremely hot, but then on the other parts they don't need to have any heat shielding. It's just the stainless steel itself. The other advantage is that stainless steel is very cheap compared to carbon fiber. So he threw around the figures of for carbon fiber, it's about 130,000 per ton, and stainless steel is only $25,000 per ton. So that's quite a cost saving, yeah. And the other couple of advantages he threw around is that it's quite easy to weld. They actually made this ship outside. They didn't make it inside a factory. They just welded it there outside. But I think that's partly because he probably couldn't wait for the actual, you know, construction buildings to be made. He just wanted to make the prototype. It's also very resilient in different kinds of elements. So stainless steel, you know, it's not going to crack, it's not going to rust. It's, you know, it's just a very good material. And the other thing that was brought up is that say they land on, you know, there's a group of people who land on Mars and they need materials. The ship is made of stainless steel, so they can easily, you know, cut it up and use it for whatever they may need.
Make a frying pan or something, or
yeah, totally, you know, whatever
things that are more useful, I'm sure, than that. Yeah.
So I mean, and he plans to carry about 100 people on this ship, which is amazing. You know, that's a lot of people. But yeah. I think you'd have to be very brave, but that's okay. I mean, you know, he's very ambitious. He's shown that he can do things before, you know. So, you know, I kind of think that, yeah, he's definitely going to achieve this. The next stage, so the booster stage, that's the stage that actually gets the ship out of Earth's gravitational pull and into orbit. It's 68 meters tall. So totally, as a total, the whole ship will be 118 meters tall.
Wow.
This is
a tall
really
ship.
Very tall ship. Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah.
The booster can have up to 37 Raptor engines in it. So the Raptor is what they've been testing in a Starhopper vehicle. It's like just a little version of the Starship. You know, they've been, you know, taking off and re-landing with it.
Yep.
And it actually has two times the thrust of the Saturn V vehicle, which was used in the Apollo mission. So that's quite strong.
Yes.
Yeah, and they showed some testing of the Raptor engines during the presentation. And, yeah, I just love seeing a rocket, you know, engine burn
ignite,
for some
yeah.
reason. Yeah, I just love it. So that was very exciting to see. another interesting thing. The idea is to launch the Starship out into orbit with the fuel that it has on board. But then to get to Moon or Mars, what they're going to do is send up another ship which helps the Starship to refuel. So they have the orbital refilling, he's called it. So that way they have enough fuel to get to the Moon or Mars, which is pretty cool. I mean, they already dock with space station now, and he thinks that refueling in space will be much easier. So we'll see about that one. So his whole premise really is that, this is his philosophy, is that he wants to preserve consciousness. So in our solar system, we're the only, creatures, that we know of that, are alive like us and, have consciousness. And he thinks that we need to spread out and keep us going, So that's the, interesting way of looking at things.
Right.
Yeah. So, and the other things that he was talking about is that he has a very ambitious timeline, I have to say. He wants to reach orbit in about 6 months with this Starship.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a very short amount of time. He talked about, Mach 1, which is the one he's got, Mach 2, Mach 3, and then Mach 4 is the one that's going to launch. So his idea then is to build these ships on a large scale, so it just kind of becomes commonplace that, we have all these Starships. They're on the base and they're just taking off and landing all day, many times, and going to Mars, taking supplies to Mars in the, idea to colonize Mars and to set up people living on Mars. That's his grand plan, which, I'd be very interested to see. And I think he's talking about, maybe even next year trying to get people to go to Mars. So,
wow.
he's very ambitious. I'm still wondering about how people will survive on Mars and how we can actually get people living there, with a suitable atmosphere and all the rest of it. I think it'll be, obviously very restrained to start with, very primitive to start with, but, he thinks it can be done. I guess we'll see if it can be done.
He's produced videos of modules being flown to the moon, to Mars, and he's got images of this small city kind of set up. He's kind of planning ahead a lot, very ambitious goals. I wanted to ask you, because I watched a couple of things, but were there any shots or images of the interior of the Starship? Because I've only seen exterior. Yeah, was there anything on the inside? Like, what does it look like? Or
I was wondering that myself, actually, while I was watching. I mean, how are they going to fit 100 people in there? He thinks that everyone's going to have about 10 cubic meters each space.
Wow.
So they will have enough room to move around.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's not too bad at all. So he's thinking of that. The other thing is somebody asked about life support system. And he kind of thinks it's a secondary issue. He's like, yeah, no, we can do it. That's the easy part.
They'll
like,
be able to breathe.
that's fine. That's the easy part. I mean, for him, it's not an issue. They do it on the Space International Space Station already. So he doesn't see why it can't be done on a longer flight over to Mars. My thing would be I hope there's quite a few backup systems because it's a lot. I think it's about 6 months or something journey to get to Mars.
It's a long way.
Yeah, it's quite a long way. And you don't really want to be stuck out there with an emergency because it's not like anybody can come over and save you in a hurry. So unless they have a few of these ships going together and somehow that I don't know, you know, but yeah, I mean, for me, the most exciting thing is to see such a large ship in production and I can't wait to see it actually take off and, you know, the boosters land again and to see the Starship actually, you know, the re-entry, you know, seeing it come in and also land the same way as the rocket, the boosters do using their engines. You know, so from that kind of point of view, I'm very excited. I'm all for this kind of development. You know, it's going to be amazing. I think perhaps they should try and go to the moon first, you know, because it's closer. Sure. That's my opinion. But he seems to be very adamant that, you know, Mars, we're concentrating on Mars. We want to go to Mars. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I really probably haven't done it justice, but you might, you know, we're going to put a link up to this presentation on YouTube, and it's really worth watching and getting excited about this. You know, I think it's a very interesting times for space travel, humans and space travel.
And just a fun fact that we've actually discussed before. Was it you or Jerry who talked about how we have a bishop for the moon, like the moon has its own bishop? Do you remember that discussion as well?
Yeah, might have been Jared, but I remember you guys talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, because I was just thinking, you know, if they set up colonies on the moon and whatever else, you know, clearly there's going to be people of religious faiths, including Catholics, that may end up there if this thing actually does get as big as what people might say it will over the next. Yeah. You know, number of decades or whatever, but if it's the bishop of the Diocese of Orlando, Florida, is the bishop of that area, but is also the bishop of the moon.
That's correct.
And,
yes.
Yeah, and it comes from a rule in the 1917 Code of Canon Law that says that basically a newly discovered land territory would fall under the bishop from whence the discovering expedition departed. So because Cape Canaveral is in Orlando. And apparently Bishop Borders, who was a bishop at the time of the moon landing, actually joked with the Pope of the time, with Pope Paul the VI. He said, "You know, Holy Father, I am the bishop of the moon." Yes.
I like that. So
yeah,
I think that when he has to do his pastoral visits, he'll have to get onto one of these starships and head off to the moon and to the Mars to minister to the people. And
well, if he's got to do sacrament of confirmation, that's going to he's going to have to head up there. So knowing that, wouldn't you be sweating if you were the bishop of the area where SpaceX launches its starship from that goes to Mars?
Yeah, which is Boca Chica in Texas. So if you're around there.
If you're the bishop of that place, you'd probably be getting a bit concerned. Yeah, better get some catechetical materials ready. Get, was it Father Corey's one? Formed. Better get that ready and sent off to Mars as well. Yeah,
exactly.
They're all set to go. Formed, Mars edition. Yep.
But yeah, it's a good point that you bring up. I mean, I don't see why it can't be expanded out to planets. Why not?
All right. Well, like Caroline said, that we'll leave all the links to videos and information about that on our show notes, and we'd like to know what people think about that too. There's a whole lot of ethical concerns and psychological things to think about and spiritual things to think about. You know, not just the machinery, but also the fact that we're sending people. There's a lot of things to think about there. But Caroline, let's move on now to apps and technology.
The Enterprise computer system is controlled by three primary main processing cores, cross-linked with redundant Mellicorts RAM stack, 14 kiloquad interface modules. Core element is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kilolaterals, 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now, you do know what a bilateral kilolateral is.
Well, of course I do.
So, Caroline, this is I feel like I evangelized you with this.
You did. yes.
Yeah. So, basically, what's happened is over about 8 or 9 years, I was using Dropbox, which was great for me. Dropbox was a revolution. You know, being able to store files online in the cloud, you know, and have a massive amount of space to do that. And to back up photos and things like that. So the reason I originally got it was because I was storing files that I needed for work. I'm a high school teacher, so we produce a lot of materials. And I was afraid of storing something on a device. You know, I used to have a backup hard drive, which I'm actually looking at right now, and it died within a year. Like it cracked. Yeah. You know, like died and had enough. And I'm worried about backup hard drives. Because as your backup, it's meant to be there if your computer dies, you know, if something goes wrong with your computer. But the backup drive actually crashed and stopped working before the computer did. So when I looked for a solution, I found Dropbox, and it's basically, like I said, it's a completely online storage. And when I originally got it, I think it was 100 gigabytes. And then they upgraded me to 1 terabyte, and I fell in love with it. So I was storing my files on there, all my essays for uni when I was doing my theology degree, you know, everything every file I needed, all my photos, everything was being stored there. And I started looking around because I needed to get access to Microsoft Office. And the reason for that is because my workplace, my school, has gone all in with Microsoft for good reason as well. Like, you know, it's they've worked out a good deal with Microsoft, you know, to get Office 365 for students, and it improves communication, all kinds of things. We were using Google Classroom for a while, which is good, but a bit clunky for my, you know, I'm not, you know, not begrudging anyone who uses it. If you got it, if you're using it successfully, it's great. But I don't know, it didn't really fit what our school was trying to do. So I started looking into getting Office 365 for myself. And what I discovered, because I needed all the Office apps and whatever, is that not only do you get access to Word and Excel and PowerPoint and all these tools that I use all the time, but it comes with 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage, and it was actually cheaper than Dropbox. So for me, it was a no-brainer. So I've actually really enjoyed using it. I've been using it for about a year and a half now. And the good thing that I've liked about my Office 365 subscription is, you know, it is a subscription. You can pay a yearly amount, which is a bit cheaper than paying monthly. But what happens is every time Word or any other Office app is updated, you get the update straight away. So you don't have to worry about, or when, you know, when the next version of Word comes out, you won't have to worry about buying it again, which is what you had to do in the past. You just get the next version of Word, Excel, whatever it might be. The other thing is that the subscription, and I sound like a salesperson from Microsoft right now.
But, you sold me on it.
the flexibility that I like as well is that one person with an account can put these apps on up to 5 devices, which includes laptops, computers, phones, iPads, whatever. And believe it or not, on my phone, I've actually found use for Office apps too. It's actually been really useful. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to edit things that I've done on the go really quickly. Accessing my OneDrive from my phone when I need to as well, all those kinds of things. So I found it really useful for that. So then, Caroline, you were saying that, what was your, I'll pass over to you. You were looking for Office for online storage, but how did I evangelize you or bring you on board?
So because I needed some tech advice, so I am currently paying money for iCloud every month, and it just, like, I'm paying for 2 terabytes a month now for about $15 a month. And I just don't feel like paying $15 a month just for storage. And the problem is it's mostly photos, because I take a lot of photos, probably like everybody else who has a phone, you know, with a camera, you take a lot of photos. And these are kind of precious photos. It's all, you know, family photos. It's all, you know, I've had photos taken from since my, you know, both my boys were born and, you know, as they've grown up. And I just feel like there's got to be a different way. And I also, like you said, if you put them on a hard drive, there's a chance the hard drive could die and you lose everything. So I did send a message out to you and our brother Paul, actually. But you jumped in with this Office 365 thing and you said, you know, it comes with, you know, you get a terabyte of storage every, you know, and you get to have Office, you get to have Word, you have Excel, everything on it. And the price is, you know, it's really cheap. If you, what was it, 100 and something a year? But if we split it in two, you know, it's really cheap. And you're telling me you're doing the whole selling, you know, the sales pitch. And, you know, I was like, I actually really need Word because I use it. And, you know, I needed to write a letter on Word, which I have a Mac at the moment and I use Pages. I just find Pages really hard to use. You know, and I use Word a lot at work. So I'm quite, you know, apt to using Word. I'm used to using the functions of it, but Pages is a bit cumbersome. So, you know, I think it only took about three texts or something, you know, three text messages swapped for me to go, yep, I'm in, we're doing it. So, yeah. And the thing is I can set one. So we got, what's it, three accounts each? Is that right? And then, and I can give one to my husband, Phil, who loves Excel. He uses it for his work. And I want to set one up for my kids, you know, because as they get older, they're going to need Word and Excel and whatever as they go through school. So I thought, yeah, I'll set up an account for them as well. And then we're all covered. We all have the Microsoft products that we need and we all have terabyte of storage each that we can put everything that we need in there, and it's on the go, like you said. I can just access it from my phone or my computer or whatever device I'm using at the time, you know. So yeah, that's pretty much how it came about for us to you know, to get on board with that.
Yeah, and it's really odd because 5 years ago I don't think I would have been singing the praises of Microsoft. I was always frustrated with Microsoft products. But I think they've really upped their game in terms of software, at least. Hardware, I don't know. I haven't really used any Microsoft hardware recently, but at least in terms of software and in terms of services, it's I think they've made it cost effective as well. And like I said, you know, because we're family, I hope this works within their rules, but because we're family, we're sharing a family plan. So and like you said, you know, you've got three accounts, I've got three accounts, it makes it cost effective. And, you know, my own family has the bits and pieces they need, and you've got what you need for your family. So it works out really well. And I like the flexibility of it. And like I said, it's more reliable online storage. You know, I've got old photos too of when, you know, from when Damien was born. I've got lots of photos of Alexander from, you know, from his birth, you know, last year till today. I've got a huge, like, I think maybe 10 gigs of photos from when I was in Jerusalem in 2012.
Oh, gosh.
And I would not want to lose those photos, you know, like, yeah. That's so precious. Online storage. Yeah. Like, hopefully, I'm hoping Microsoft is better than a backup drive. I'm assuming they are.
I hope so.
Yeah. But it's, you know, getting the online storage exactly the same as what I had with Dropbox, plus all the apps, I think was really good. And, you know, it's not to knock solutions that other people have because everyone has their own workflow. Some people work really well within the Apple, you know, atmosphere of, you know, using Pages and, you know, Keynote. Keynote's a fantastic program. I love it too. Mm-hmm. I just find it a bit more time consuming than PowerPoint. And because everyone at work is using PowerPoint, I have to work within that anyway. And all the Google apps are really good too. But again, this, you know, I just didn't click with it. I know other people do. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. Can I just throw in an unplanned tech thing as well? I just remembered the other day because at the moment our son Alexander, he's got a bit of a virus. He's been a bit, you know, a bit sick. You know, he's had a cold and things like that. And one thing with, you know, with 1 year olds and, you know, and younger, and maybe even a little bit older, is that when they get colds and things like that, they can't sleep very well because they rely on breathing through their nose a lot. So during the day, for example, we'd get Alexander, we'd put him down to sleep, and, you know, every 10 minutes, 20 minutes or so, he'd start crying because he can't breathe through his nose again, and we'd have to go and help him. So last episode, Jared and I talked about our tech, and we were talking about the Amazon Echo. And I talked about how I've got a couple of Echo devices around the house. And I worked out how to use the Echo as a baby monitor. So, oh,
fantastic.
Yeah. So I was thinking, oh, that's one way we can actually monitor Alexander while he sleeps. So what I did was the Echo in the lounge room, I got it to call the Echo in the bedroom. And then I just turned the Echo in the bedroom. I just turned the volume all the way down to zero so that Alexander wouldn't hear any noise coming from us, but we would hear if there was a noise coming from the bedroom. So it was I used the drop-in. Yeah. Yeah, the drop-in, there's a thing called drop-in where you can just drop in on any Echo as long as you have permission to do it. So within the house, it's okay. I wouldn't do it with friends and family. That's a bit awkward. But
for sure.
And of course, you know, clearly, you know, if you've got children sleeping, check on them all the time. You know, don't wait for a baby monitor to go off. But in those times when you're not there, when you're not checking, if something happens, you know, if there's a cry or whatever else, you can at least hear that and then go and see what's going on. So that's my little tech tip for using for another thing I found with the Amazon Echo.
So useful. That's really cool. I didn't know I could do that. I mean, I don't have them in my house, but I'm learning through you. I'll probably get them soon now.
Yeah, sorry, I might evangelize you into that now. Yeah. Yes. If they could just merge Echoes and Office 365, my life would be complete.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? You know, like we were talking about the AI robot priest. What I really want, this is what I really want, okay? A robot in my house, a bit like the Jetsons, that like Rosie, who's making dinner and cups of tea and, you know, maybe a neck massage now and then. That's
I'd be all
actually
over that.
What I really want. Yeah. So maybe Elon Musk can get onto that. He's pretty genius at making amazing products.
Yeah. Why is he wasting time going to Mars? Make us a robot that can make us a cup of tea. That's what we really want.
That's all I ask in life, a robot that can make me a cup of tea. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't ask for much. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. And lastly, we just wanted to do a bit of follow-up. And today's follow-up is, as I mentioned before, is that the Catholics of Oz were on Let's Talk recently. Caroline, do you want to talk about the experience quickly?
Oh, we had so much fun. And I just want to say, Father Corey, if you're listening, we had so much fun meeting you. You're amazing person. You're so much fun to talk to. I wish we were in the same country so that we could, you know, meet more often. But so Father Corey had us on his Let's Talk program on his podcast, and we spoke about the Catholics of Oz, we spoke about our origins, and we spoke about being Catholic in Australia. One thing though, when Father Corey asked us, you know, to introduce ourselves, I think I was just, my mind was went blank, I have to say. And I really forgot to say something too, that apart from being a mom and working in science and all the rest of it, I also am a self-published author. But the reason I bring up that is because, you know, my love of space and, you know, art and writing children's books. I wrote a book called What's That Twinkle in the Sky? And it's designed to, you know, in a fun, you know, way, and, you know, with the artistic drawings and things, it's to get children into kind of, you know, just a basic understanding into stars and how they're formed. Because like my children were always asking me about stars when they were younger, and even now, you know, they're not, you know, they're only 8 and 5, but a couple of years ago they started, you know, they saw me looking through the telescope and looking at the sky, and they're asking questions. So I wrote this book for them, but then for also other children. And, you know, and I did want to tell Father Corey this as well, because, you know, I know he's interested in space and that kind of thing. And like, if anyone is interested, it is available on Amazon. You know, it's under, you know, I made a publishing name of, you know, Frankie and Harry's Bookshelf. So I do have a website, frankieandharrysbookshelf.com, but also you can get it through Amazon. And if you go to smile.amazon.com, and you can choose SQPN as your organization to support. So if you buy through them, a little bit of money will go to the SQPN network and help us, you know, keep on air and keep doing what we're doing. I had so much fun with that podcast that I think that, you know, it'd be great to kind of interact with Father Corey again sometime. I mean, it was so much fun.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was probably admittedly a little bit nervous beforehand. I don't know if I, mm-hmm. I don't know if I showed it to you guys or not, whereas we were just getting ready before Father Corey was. Yeah. But you know, it was such a relaxing and fun conversation, and
it was.
I was just so happy to be, you know, talking to this person who we listen to. We listen to Let's Talk and we hear his voice, but to actually be on his show with him was a great joy. And he's such a wonderful host and such a friendly person. And we really enjoyed having the time to sit down with him and be able to do that, and also to work out the time difference, because we were podcasting from the future. It was Sunday for us and Saturday night for him. So
He was in 1 degree Celsius snowy, windy weather. I mean, in his house, but it was cold over there. And he was remarking how he could see through to your yard through the window behind you. Yes.
We'll put a link to that episode in our show notes. Actually, also, it also came out on our podcast stream as well. So you would have probably seen it come up and listened to it already, possibly. But definitely, we'll put a link to that episode if you haven't heard it yet. And it's just another way to get to know a little bit more about us. And also, if you are mostly a Catholics of Oz listener, it'd be good to expose you to another show on the SQPN network. And if you've come over from Let's Talk, welcome. It's great to hear you. It's great to have you here, and I hope you've enjoyed the show with us. So why don't we finish it up? Thank you so much for joining us for episode 18 of the Catholics of Oz. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Catholics of Oz. Today, we want to thank John N., Jennifer P., Mark S., Justin R., and Elizabeth T. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the other shows at StarQuest to continue. You can visit them by visiting at sqpn.com/give. Also, we'd love to know your thoughts about the topics we've discussed today. So you can leave us feedback by visiting sqpn.com/Oz, spelt O-Z, where you can find our show notes as well. Our shows also get posted onto the StarQuest Facebook page, which is facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, so you can leave comments there as well. And also, we have our own Catholics of Oz Facebook page at facebook.com/Catholics of Oz. So we'd love for you to join us there and discuss our latest episodes. We can also be reached by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Lindsay. It was fun. Great conversation as usual.
Yeah. Once again, I'm Lindsay Sant, and thank you for listening to The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.